Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KCoRadio.com.
Good morning. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness in Imperial County and Valley and Yuma Valley and Mexicali Valley and all of the little valleys that dot this desert southwest within radio distance. Mario was up personally shining the tower last week. And so now the signal's another, 100 yards or so. So we're here. We hope you're there. Welcome. As usual, we've got a great show planned for you, and I encourage you to call. And if you haven't already noticed, Maria Wyatt's at a leadership conference in Sacramento. So yours truly, Scott, will be holding down the fort today, messing up the intros because she's got this like whole thing that she just does really smoothly and with lots of alliteration and stuff, and every time I come on, I'm like, okay, now what? But I trust it, and it just, so whatever I say, I say. It is 7:37-ish, so if you got to be there at 8 o'clock, keep driving. Don't just, like, pull over and listen to the show. And 337-8874 is the phone number if you want to call us and talk to us, and because you don't even know who the guest is yet, that's probably not the first thing on your mind. So, let's introduce the guest. Our guest today is Emily Bill. That's Emily Bill. That's easy, huh? You're like three syllables. Yeah. It's the whole name. And she is an MFT intern at Imperial Valley College, and where she holds a counseling position. Morning, Emily.
Hi, Scott.
First time. Well, is this meeting your expectation? Emily actually listens to the show on a regular basis.
Yeah, so. I'm a huge fan, so this is, like, pretty exciting to me.
So, is this, like, expectation-wise, is this where you thought you'd be and
it's
what it would
exactly
be
exactly where I thought I would be.
In the yeah. Muted Orangewald Studios
I
of
like it.
KVL.
It's kind of mellow.
It is. It's yeah. Not such a bad place. The lights are a little bright right now, but we'll get to her. Let's start, I guess, by IBC is for people who don't go, maybe even for people who do go there, is always kind of changing its dynamic and trying to grow with the community and represent, really trying to meet a community need in terms of providing entry-level college classes for whoever needs them here. What does that look like nowadays? I mean, I don't hang out there.
Well, one of the things that the administration talks a lot about right now is that really we're really like a medium-sized college now, but we've been kind of operating as a small-sized college. So there's been some growing pains in that area, and, the administration is really working hard to kind of accommodate the growth that's happening. Obviously, the valley is growing, and then this is the only community college in the area, so that's growing as well. So we've, obviously there's budget challenges too.
Been there are deals.
Yeah, yeah. We don't have to go into that. But basically, they're still trying to provide as many services as they can to students, as many classes as they can to students. And so one of the things that we were able to add on to the services that we already have is mental health services, which is new. That's not something that they've ever been able to offer in the past. So that's what I'm up to these days.
It's kind of interesting. It's like, well, there's never any mental health services on a college campus. And then you start thinking, wow, college campus, that's probably not the least mental health needy place in the world. What does your student demographic look like? I mean, you've got all types, sizes, shapes, colors, everything?
Yeah. I mean, we have, obviously it represents the population in the valley for the most part, but we have a lot of older students. We have a lot of parenting students. We have a lot of young students. We have a really high college-going rate, so that's people that graduate from high school that goes right into college. We actually have a very high rate compared to other counties. So the good thing is that we get a lot of people graduating high school and coming to IBC. Hmm. So we do have a lot of young students as well, but we have people that are learning English, and then we have people that are trying to transfer to four-year schools, people that are going in the nursing program. We have all types of people on campus. So,
are you seeing any returning troops, men and women from various desert conflict stuff?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we are. And I had just had a conversation with one of the academic counselors. Her name is Lorraine Mazerol, and she specifically works with veterans and people that are, coming back from combat to get them, help them get going with classes and stuff like that. So they have the GI Bill and And so we were just talking about how she sees, I think, she said like 10 a week just in her regular appointments. And so you've got a decent amount on campus too. So that's another population that we have.
And so I was always curious about that because you walk into high school guidance counseling centers and IVC's got like a little like 1x1 foot like thing on the wall with a couple brochures on it. And then the whole other side of the room is dominated by all this marketing stuff for hey, join the military. It's going to be a lot of fun. Be like action hero only like in real life instead of video.
Yeah. So they, I mean, they have their own challenges. You know, some of them are, they're from here and they're coming back after being in a pretty miserable situation over there. And then they're trying to, you know, they are not necessarily, they weren't necessarily interested in going in into college maybe when they graduated high school, which is maybe one of the reasons why they went into the military.
Oops, now they're back and right back.
Right. So they're maybe not, that wasn't always maybe their vision necessarily, but now that they're out of the military and there's this money available to them, they're like, well, let's give it a shot. So that's hopefully a population that I'd like to start working with and maybe working with their families and their partners to help them kind of readjust.
Nice. So we're here with Emily Bill. She's an MFT intern counselor at IVC, Imperial Valley College. I'm sorry, acronym. And she is now part of a new program that addresses the mental health needs of the college community. And 337-8874 is the phone number if you want to like, do the shout out for, what are you guys, the Rainbow Warriors? No, that's Hawaii. What's your mascot?
We are the...
Oh, you don't even... Aha!
He's a student. He says no, right?
Did you do research on this? Go for it. No.
Oh, my gosh.
Aren't you Aztec warrior something? Some tribal person carrying weapons.
It's not the Arabs, is it?
That's it. That is.
Oh,
that
good. See, I knew it. That's I was it. Just wanted to make sure you guys did.
Thanks. Now we do. Anyway, 337-8874 is the phone number. So I know I read the president's George W. Bush's Commission on Mental Health report way back when that happened, like 6 years ago or so. And pretty clearly in that it says that one out of every four people, be they men, women, children, adults, old people, et cetera, in any given year have identifiable and diagnosable and treatable symptoms of a mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. So how many kids you got on campus?
Yeah. So we have a population of, it's over 8,000.
So 2,000, there you go.
And
easy math.
I'm glad you brought up that data because Columbia University did a study, I think in the last year or two, and they looked at college students or college age students. So we're looking at that population, somewhere between 18 and 25 probably. And what they found was that, you know, their understanding is that over half of this population has mental health issues, but only a quarter of them actually seek any type of help. So you have a lot of people that are really...
Well, only a quarter of that half.
Right.
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 Now, some of those would be probably just kind of transient types of adjustment types of problems, right?
And that's exactly the type we can see those types of students. It's not just people that have diagnosed depression or bipolar disorder or something like that. In fact, that's usually not what we're seeing. We're seeing people coming in saying,
that would be preferable, I suppose.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not, I want to make sure that it's clear to people listening and students that it's not just people with really serious issues. Some people do have some issues that are a little more serious, but a lot of times they're coming in and they're just really stressed or they're, you know, crying all the time and or fighting with their boyfriend a lot and they're not sure why. And it may be because of some adjustment issues, adjusting to coming back to school or there's been a change, you know, life change in the family, a baby or a divorce or a parent dies or something like that. So we see all different types of people coming in, but the great thing is they're coming. And that's what's really exciting and encouraging.
Well, and it sounds like almost the implicit message there is you don't have to look like some caricature of what you might think mental health disorders look like to be suffering.
Exactly. And that was one of the things, I mean, to kind of back up and explain how the program was started, basically I was part of a leadership program on campus, which was to get people who work at IVC who are interested in leadership roles or maybe becoming an administrator someday or something like that. We were able to participate in this volunteer internship program. And they paired us up with an administrator some more leader on campus, and we were able to develop a proposal or an idea for the college that would be helpful to students, or, you know, really the sky was a limit.
Sounds like fun.
It was actually really awesome. This was the baby of Travis Gregory. He's the Associate Dean of Human Resources. And so basically he's like, okay, at the end you're going to do a proposal for something, whatever you want, basically, as long as it's something that benefits the college in some way.
Did you build a second floor on the college so now there's, like, more space?
Yeah, I'm actually not very good with...
How about parking structures, too?
Yeah. The parking lot is actually looking pretty nice.
Sorry, I'm in an infrastructure mood today.
All right. I'm not sure what that means exactly.
It's all the little stuff you need so that all the kids can come in.
There you go. We have actually lots of space for people to park. Parking spots all over the place.
Chairs and tables and electricity.
We have plenty of chairs and tables, definitely electricity.
So you dive into this project.
Exactly. And so some people, presented like a way that they could make the admissions process something happen a little faster, or, you know, put together a committee to help make the campus greener, whatever it is. So as soon as I found out that there was a project that we had to do or proposal, I knew what it was. I mean, my love is, you know, supporting the mental wellness of college students. That's my thing. Mm. This is basically my dream job. And so I was able to work with the Associate Dean of Student Affairs. His name is Sergio Lopez. And he and I worked together very regularly over almost a year. I mean, we really spent a lot of time putting this together and hammering it all out. And he has tons of experience and has been at the college for a long time and has worked in all different areas. And he really cares a lot about, you know, the mental health of our students, too. So we worked on this and put it together and got our stats, and we did a survey of students, about 600 students, where we just asked them, you know, basically what's going on. And some of the numbers were pretty surprising. We had 600 students that we surveyed. There was about 12.
Survey says.
Yeah, exactly. And it was pretty informal. I mean, it wasn't super scientific or anything. We just kind of typed up something.
Get an idea what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, we really had no clue.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all known, especially the administration and staff members that have been there for a long time. I mean, everyone knows that there's mental health stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so we were able to do a survey. We did it in English and Spanish. We did it, you know, submit it to a variety of classrooms and different areas and locations. And some of the responses were surprising. Like, one of the questions was, have you ever felt suicidal? Now, this is in the past, so who knows if it's 20 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. But have you ever felt, like, suicidal? I mean, it was like 12% of the respondents said, yeah, they felt suicidal, which is, you know, alarming, really.
Nice. Yeah. It's interesting because there's data on that. And your way of administering, I mean, it sounds like they were just able to fill these out and kind of not identify any names or any, you know, and if you do stuff in mass like that, it's a little bit more anonymous.
Yeah, and we presented them to usually psychology classes. It was a lot of counseling classes, psychology classes, also a lot of the health field classes, so nurses, EMT classes. And then there was like 80% said they were stressed. Now, yeah, college students are stressed, but stress is usually the word that people use when they're coming in to come see me. I'm really stressed about this, or I'm really stressed about that.
So there's like a fine line between stress and stress.
Yeah, and so, but the fact that they're marking stress and that they feel that stress was, to me, very significant. Another question that we asked was, do you have insurance? So you can probably guess that it was only about 30%, I think, of the students said that they had insurance. Then out of those students, we asked them, okay, so you have insurance. Can you afford mental health services if you needed it?
Ooh, oh, for everybody, huh?
65%, I think almost 70% said no.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was another big one for us.
Scrape together book money.
Exactly. And then the final question was, and this was the one that we really cared the most about, was if we were to offer mental health services, would you consider using it? Not would you use it, but would you consider using it?
Yeah, kind of if you needed
it. Yeah, hey, it's out there.
If you ran out of gas, would you like to have a gas station?
Exactly. That's a good analogy. I like that. Because the idea is, are you open to it? Are you open to it? 70% said yes. So we had, that's 400 students said yes. So that was that was all that we needed, I think.
Or more frighteningly, 70% of 8,000 if you extrapolate it back out.
Yeah, I'd rather, let's go back to the 600 number.
You got a really long line outside your door right now when you get back after the show.
Right. So the great thing is, because before we, got this program going, We wanted to make sure that it was something that
it was an unmet need.
It was an unmet need.
Your perfect thing to go in and fix.
Yeah. So it's just, I still look back and I just can't believe that you know, basically a year from when I started working with Sergio, like, regularly. And again, there was a lot of help from other people, other faculty members that have, you know, worked here for a long time, and administrators, the president, Dr. Gould, was really supportive of this too. It was like a year later, this is what I'm doing.
I wonder, it's interesting. It just occurs to me that I wonder, there had to have been some sort of informal support network. Although, I mean, not obviously, like, really informal, like, probably highly individualized, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But there had to be, like, a group of caring adults on campus that were basically fielding this stuff and dealing with it the best they could, and maybe an extended community support thing.
That's exactly what was happening. And that was working okay. And that, but actually, for the people that were providing the support, namely...
Oh, academic, job burnout.
Yeah,
hello.
Academic counselors, psychology teachers, they got a lot of it, you know,
sure.
Because you're kind of talking about these various things. You may do some writing about a certain topic.
Sure.
Yeah. So people are sharing things. They're talking to the teachers after class. And it was working okay, but, you know, there's a limit to what you can do, and especially the academic counselors. I was an academic counselor for 2 years. So, you know, you have so much work that you need to accomplish in a half an hour or 45 minutes with a student, helping them choose their classes and talking to them about majors and applying to a four-year school, that there really was, like, no time to address the personal issues that were going on.
Yeah, so if they say, I'm feeling really stressed.
And we all did the best. Yeah, we all did the best that we could, and there maybe were certain counselors that we kind of said, oh, maybe you should talk to this person, because they maybe could provide some advice or support or something. But you may see a student once or twice a semester. So they get 5 or 10 minutes of talking out some stuff, and then they're left, like, still open.
Right.
With all, you know,
right.
Just kind of hanging there. So
go to Wikipedia and look up stress management.
Yeah.
Or something, huh?
Yeah. But they're
kind of a weird band-aid approach.
Right. I mean, you do the best that you can.
Yeah.
So as soon as this program opened, we actually really didn't do, like, a lot of average.
The program have an official moniker?
It's called Counseling Services.
Ooh, clever.
Yeah. Fancy, I know. It took us a couple weeks.
CSI without the I.
Exactly, CS. But it's actually under, I want to make the distinction between counselors in the academic, which is a student services building.
Yeah.
That's where financial aid is, and all the counselors are in there that do the academic stuff. And then there's some other programs that provide additional support beyond just the general academic advisors. But we are under the Student Health Center, and that's the big difference in terms of how we're funded. And so I work under the Student Health Center. And the way that our program is paid, and there's also a nurse that's available too for limited services, it's paid for by the student health fee. So that's the difference, because the students pay the money.
Nice.
And it's every term they pay, you know, a nominal amount of money.
Times 8,000.
Exactly. And so that allows for us to do stuff like this. And then, like I said, we have a nurse that can provide, you know, they give flu shots and some physicals for certain majors and things like that. So it's counseling services. And I guess you would call me a counselor, but really I'm a marriage and family therapist registered intern is my...
Would counselor please approach the bench? No,
yeah,
not that kind of counselor.
No, not that kind of counselor. So the MFT, when you were calling me an MFT intern, back to the whole acronym.
Marriage, family, therapist.
Exactly. So that means that I have my master's degree in counseling, and I'm pre-licensed, so I'm working on gaining hours to become licensed as a marriage and family therapist.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, one of the really cool things that's happening in the Valley is we've got this whole new generation of I mean, for a while it was always kind of like there weren't very many licensed people here, and because of that there was always this kind of unmet need.
Mm-hmm.
And now because of University of Phoenix, San Diego State's got another LCSW program going on, MSW program going on. We have cadres now of people coming up through the ranks and becoming part of the community. And
And that's really exciting.
They'll all migrate to La Jolla like the seagulls or something in the spring.
Right. And so the biggest thing is getting supervision is probably one of the biggest challenges, being able to find a placement. And we have a supervisor that comes in. I have a clinical supervisor. He was on the show yesterday. His name is Ernesto Corrales, and he provides the clinical supervision for my work. And he talked a lot about what he does yesterday, but he comes in and supervises the work that I do and signs off on my hours. And but you're right. We have that program at University of Phoenix. I actually teach there too. I teach undergraduate human services classes, but there's a master's program for counseling. Yep. And so I think it started off pretty small, but the cohorts,
that's
I think...
Not your alma mater, though, huh?
That's not my alma mater.
Where did you get your counseling master's?
I went to National University in San Diego, and it's both a master's in counseling psychology, and then I went to undergrad at UCSD.
Nice.
And for psychology, so... Nice. Yeah, love psychology. So, more of it, please.
And college kids, I mean, you went to college to do this, and now you're going back to college to do it.
And I went to a community college, too, and I took a non-traditional path to... where I'm at now. I was older when I went to UCSD by, at least 5 or 6 years than all the other students. And so
it actually sometimes helps.
It actually worked out really, really well for me. And so, I went to San Diego City College and I went to Palomar and,
So you didn't do like the big hedonism, leader internship thing at college, like
no.
Where sit around and worship beer and,
Yeah, no, I didn't do that formal. No,
typically, when you go like 5 years later, it's like, you guys are a little out of control. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, it was a great experience, but, UCSD really is a lot of kind of the every single part of a car and not exactly how you drive
very
the
true.
Car.
Very true.
And so that's what the master's program provided for me was really learning, how to do it, how to practice. But I, because I had this non-traditional path and because I, understand what it's like to work and go to community college or not have a job and go to community college.
Empathy for the people you work with now.
Yeah, I think that seems to be a good fit. So, I love community college. I'm all about community colleges. Not just because that's where I work, but because it helped me get into UCSD. I wouldn't have been able to get in, as a freshman to UCSD. So I did like the TAG program. Where they, you can have a guaranteed transfer, basically. So that's some of the things that our students are facing is they may be looking to transfer to a school in San Diego or something, and that with that comes some anxiety about leaving here because this is kind of a little cocoon out here. It's
bigger than it was 20 years ago, but
yeah, that's
still kind of get that feel to it, doesn't it?
But I've only lived here for a couple of years, and I get that feeling.
Yeah.
When I come back down the hill from San Diego, I'm like, oh, thank, like, yeah. San, okay.
Parochialville.
Yeah, but it's great. But
I've been here 25 years. I kind of agree.
Yeah, good. Absolutely. And it doesn't take very long to kind of feel really comfy here.
No.
So, that's something that's challenging for students is they may be fearful to leave, or maybe they have, a child and they can't necessarily go away that easily, but maybe that's where they want to go. They want to go to law school or... go to a school out of the area. So
yeah,
having
raised some young adults at this point, I'm like, I hope so. Just even if you end up coming back here, then go out and see the rest of the world outside of the valley.
That's another thing. People are coming back. I actually can think of quite a few students that have come back after leaving, and sometimes there's this sense of like failure.
Maria White is one of those comeback people, she's doing just fine.
Yeah, but some of the students that I've talked to at IVC, even when I was academic counseling, they felt really bad about coming back, like it meant that they couldn't make it in the big city or whatever.
Crashed and burned.
Big city is pretty tough to make it, so it's not.
And not for everyone.
Yeah, it's not for everyone, and so to normalize that experience and let them know that that happens to other people too, and talk about the reasons. Maybe they came back because something traumatic happened, or they got divorced or something like that.
No guarantees of pathways, are there?
Right. And so those are the kinds of things that I'm seeing and we're kind of working through. And so just to tell you a little bit more about, the process, can I tell you about the process of how people...
You can tell me right after our top of the hour break. Is that a deal?
That sounds fun.
Okay, let's do that. So let's take top of the hour break. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. Our guest is Emily Bill, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUPO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness in the Imperial Valley, and I'm not Maria Wyatt because I don't know my intros. I'm Scott Dudley. I'm your co-host, and Maria's up in Sacramento in a leadership conference, doing some really good work up there and coming back restored and recharged, and not like she's ever undercharged because she's constantly, you know, pushing the envelope. So 337-8874 is your phone number. Emily Bill is your guest. And she is an MFA, Marriage and Family Therapist intern.
Registered, that was good. Actually registered intern.
Registered intern, which is, has its own 4 pages of legalese to explain what that exactly means, right?
Right.
Okay, good. Okay. And also counselor at IVC, working under the auspices of the health department in a program, sort of, kind of.
Health services.
Health services, yeah. Close.
Kind of.
In a program she helped design. To meet the mental health needs of the students of the 8,000 students of IVC. Where are you originally from?
I was born in Omaha, Nebraska. Actually.
Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Husker.
Yeah, my grandparents are like, they're farmers.
Rock Chalk Jayhawk? No, that's not you guys, huh?
No, I'm not sure what.
That was Kansas.
Yeah. And the cool thing about living here is that I mostly grew up in San Diego, though. I mean, I spent my, you know, I think since I was 10.
That's quite a gift from a girl from Nebraska, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coast.
The cool thing about the Valley is that I totally feel like I'm driving around near my grandparents' farm in Iowa, and then there's palm trees too. So it's like the, you know, the integration of both of my
yes.
worlds.
Yes,
which I like.
Yeah, nice.
So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, welcome.
Thanks.
And you ended up here, huh?
I did.
You sticking?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Really? Yep.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your program. How do people get in? How do, I mean, you get 8,000 students. How do we...
Okay, every time you say 8,000 students, I start feeling a little panicked.
I know. It's just,
how about...
It's a big number, isn't
you
it?
You can just say we have a lot of students.
Thousands.
Yeah.
Virtually.
we have a lot of students at IVC. And the way that they get referred is through a variety of
if methods. If you come in and say you heard it on the radio show, we'll... give you like a free certificate for gratitude or something.
Yeah.
No.
That'd be so cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you heard it on the radio, just tell Emily. Say, hey, I heard you on the radio.
Exactly.
I was feeling stressed and, hi, I'm here.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, that would be great, actually. So one of the ways that people come to see me is that there's actually a poster. It's a really simple poster, and it's near the cafeteria, the student center. But most people go there to...
Simple like crayon or simple...
No, I'm a wannabe graphic designer. So,
oh, very cool. Yeah.
In my head, I'm a graphic designer, so I created this poster or whatever. You know, brightly colored and so it offers the services and it shows the phone number and my hours. And so that's actually been one of the ways I've gotten most of the referrals, which I was a little surprised.
So you didn't like just take a picture of a really stressed out person and say, is this you?
No, it's a little more, it's a little more graphic.
So it's more like friendly
like
and
a head
inviting.
With, yeah, like a head with like gears inside and
nice.
They think the slogan's like, what's on your mind? Or
nice.
Like that. Anyway, so that's how some people are coming to see me. So they're actually just coming over, which is pretty cool because, you know, I was wondering, well, are people going to be kind of feel a little... odd about just kind of coming in and saying, hey, need help? No, not at all. People are just coming over, so that's really good. Definitely from the academic counselors or the people in that those programs over there in student services.
They're referring.
Oh, my gosh. They're like, finally, like they may have somebody that they've been, like you were saying, providing that informal support to.
In the half hour they had to actually
exactly.
get the class scheduled together.
Right. And the cool thing is that they already have rapport with that student, so... the student is maybe more trusting to come over. So it's actually a really good way to get people. Another thing I do is I do classroom presentations. So I generally go to classes that are taught by counselors, which are called personal development classes. That's like their course title. And so usually...
You said that like I've never had a personal development class. I'm feeling the energy.
Have you?
No.
Okay.
Frankly.
They're pretty cool. There's personal development courses. One's like a career and personal development. There's like a one-unit personal development class. But anyway, counselors are teaching it. So they're they definitely include kind of a section about, hey, you know, here's some how to deal with stress.
A piece of personal development is managing your mental wellness or health.
Exactly. So usually that's part of, you know, part of a lecture. So now they'd ask, generally they'll ask me to come by.
Graphic artist, lecturer, registered MFT intern.
Forget the registered. Yeah. That's important. So
how's your lecture go? What do you aim for in the lecture? Just curious.
Yeah. So what I'm aiming for first is I want them to kind of see who I am, or, you know that I'm not like some scary psychoanalyst with glasses and a notepad.
So a little rapport.
Yeah, definitely. It's like education, kind of like that psycho education.
Do you do like a John Daly thing to kind of loosen up the crowd and get everybody?
I don't know what that is.
I know, like the Daily Show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Just a little couple jokes. Or,
yeah, John
you know.
Stewart.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah. So,
you did know who it was.
John Daly. I think I thought, okay.
You've had golfing. You like hit the driver.
I have an opening monologue.
Fall out of your golf cart.
Yeah. I trip when I walk in.
Nice. And we're loud close.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So I come in and I introduce myself and basically tell them about the program. Sometimes tell them a little bit about, generally speaking, to maintain confidentiality, generally kind of tell them, well, these are the types of people that I may see. Again, to say you don't have to be, you know, really in a bad place to come see me. You could just be kind of not feeling great, and that's okay too.
Do you do a little self-monitoring thing there and kind of give people an indication of what that might look like or feel like?
I do. So we talk about if you're feeling so bad that you aren't sleeping, you're not eating, you're not, not enjoying things that you used to enjoy, that could be an indicator that, you have some depression going on. I definitely also let them know that if they ever feel so bad that they want to hurt themselves or hurt somebody else, that I'm not the person that you're going to come to right away. You're going to call the crisis line.
Yeah, like a 911.
Yeah, exactly. Or call the Imperial County Crisis Line or, something like that. So that's exactly what I do. Let them know what maybe something might look like that could be something.
And give them some safe resources.
Yeah.
The
one thing that I get like a big response from is when I tell them that I can actually do couples counseling. And that seems to get people really excited, maybe laugh a little bit, and then usually a big discussion ensues about couples counseling.
Which person that I'm dating should I take in for couples
exactly.
counseling?
Exactly. But the neat thing about the way that our program is set up is that I can see individuals, I can see couples, and I can see families. Only one person of the client unit has to be enrolled.
Nice.
So I can see a couple.
Extend out into the community in a way.
I can see a couple as long as one person is currently enrolled in that term. I can see them, the couple.
Do you get, like, how much of your business is couples? That's interesting.
I've had a handful. I've had a handful of couples. I mean, it's not a huge, not half, but it's more than I thought. And I really like doing couples counseling, so I get pretty excited when couples come in. So I'm talking about that in the classrooms, and that's usually the big eye-opener. People are like, wow, really?
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah.
Really bad. So I have that. And
that would be developmentally normal for most of the younger people there. I mean, if they'd already figured out the whole couples thing, they'd be like way ahead of the game, wouldn't they?
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Because most of the people in these personal development classes usually are on the younger side. You're not so much seeing some of the more, the older students. But so they're excited about that. And then sometimes I'll talk about, there's the cage questionnaire, which is the drinking, four questions, cutting down, annoyed, guilty, and eye-opener. So it asks four questions, have you ever tried to cut down drinking and you weren't successful? Do people ever get annoyed by drinking? And people, that's a big laugh, too, when I bring that up in the class. But that's, it's something that people sometimes are like, ooh, people do get really annoyed by me drinking.
Is that, it's funny because we think of community college maybe as, because you don't have on-campus housing, you don't really see that tip of that iceberg. But it sounds like that must be a fairly common experience for them too.
Yeah, and obviously since we live in a border town, you're able to cross the border, and drink. It's 18, right, is the drinking age.
Correct.
And I grew up in San Diego and live near Tijuana, so I may or may not have gone down there a few times.
It's an undisclosed location.
Exactly. But, that's a reality of living here. And so You know, there it's...
There's a little bit of energy in the country to push the drinking age down to 18 anyway.
Yeah. So. Right. And so, and whatever. I mean, you don't have to be 21. People drink when they're not 21. You know, that's what's the law.
It's a life management issue with potentially big consequences.
Exactly.
So, careful.
Right. So, we... So then, again, going back to the CAGE questionnaire, mm-hmm. then you have the guilt. So do you ever feel guilty about drinking? And then the eye-opener question is, have you ever had to drink in the morning to handle a hangover? So I'm trying to just gather that data for kind of our program because we may
so you do that anonymously then?
I do that anonymously.
Like half sheets
yep,
of paper. Half,
it's actually half sheets of paper, yellow paper. And so they tell me if they're male or female, and I think they tell me their age, and that's it. And I'm just kind of gathering that because we may in the future do some type of alcohol awareness outreach.
Is it like baseball or is it like shooting free throws? So do you, to get like a good score, do you have to get like 3 out of 4 in or is 1 out of 4, which
usually, I mean, the research that I've done on it, is that 2 is really, that 2 is significant.
Okay, there you go.
But I say 1 could be enough for a conversation about it,
sure.
You know? So, I mean, 1, you know.
Is of at least topical interest
exactly.
Because you have somebody using a substance
right.
and experiencing some
right.
subjective, personally interpreted okay. degree of not happiness.
Right, and I think it depends. I mean, if the answer is, yes, people get annoyed by my drinking, that by itself, you know, let's say you're single, you don't have any kids, you're just kind of hanging out, maybe you really like to sing super loud when you're been drinking. I don't know. And people are annoyed by that. That's one way to go.
Or you're still living at mom's house.
Yeah.
And you actually do like to go out and dance and have a couple of drinks.
Exactly. Yeah. But mom is annoyed.
Yeah.
Or you are married, have a couple kids, and, you know, you're drinking heavily and your husband's like really annoyed because you're not doing what you need to be doing
yeah, that's
to take care of.
Crossing over from annoyed into something else.
Right. So, I mean, I just, that's what I usually tell them. You know, if you've marked any of them and you're kind of seeing that you're maybe heading towards marking a second, maybe you want to come talk to me about it, you know. So that's just one thing that I do in class.
But what's your data suggest? I mean, are there quite a few alcohol?
It's a lot of males. A lot of,
people out there?
A lot of males are, I'm seeing a lot more males marking, you know, too. And part of it, you know, I'm still haven't kind of collecting the data and not, haven't really done a lot of crunching, but I've just kind of glanced through them and yeah. So it's, I think it's something that will, you know, as this program is just kind of getting started and we're just trying to figure out the, you know, navigate through the unknown territory.
Do you touch on other substances as part of your mental health spectrum?
Do you mean in
like for example cannabis? I mean, or which seems like it might be a pretty predominant IVC substance.
Yeah, I haven't, you know, that's not been something that's really been a topic of conversation necessarily. Usually it's drinking. That's really the one that seems to come up the most. And again, that's even in when I was doing academic advising, that's just generally.
Yeah.
And I did my practicum for my master's program at the University of Michigan in Flint. And so I saw a lot of students there. So when I kind of look at just in general working with college students, alcohols, that's definitely come
well, at least it wasn't the University of Michigan in like Dearborn or something, you know.
Yeah.
At least it was, but it wasn't Ann Arbor either.
It definitely was not Ann Arbor. It was Flint.
I, you know, Flint is it's fascinating because it's really the quintessential Rust Belt town.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of friends that grew up there and halfway to my grandma's house.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you know, in Flint, when I did my practicum, it was at times 2 degrees. Sometimes -2. And then I moved here, you know, maybe 6 months after, and it was like 120. So it was literally a 100-degree difference in
yeah.
where I was doing my work, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, my best welcome to the Valley story was the first summer I was here, I cracked my windshield by putting cold water on it.
Oh.
It's like washing my windshield, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I guess it is hot out.
Yeah. Our welcome was 122, and the stomach flu. With
yeah,
everyone.
Oh, nice,
it was
nice,
pretty much
nice.
The most miserable thing ever. But,
and if you can survive yeah. that, everything.
And we
is
did. So now it's
beautiful
like, oh,
now.
we can hang with any temperature. But going back to Flint, that was a campus of 8,000 students. So it was kind of neat.
Mott, was that Mott Community College or not?
Mott was the feeder college. So there was some similarities between the work that I did at University of Michigan. Even though it was in Michigan and a university, it was still a commuter campus. It was a very challenged town economically is an understatement, really. So there was challenges in that area. It was actually a lot higher crime. You know, there's a lot of violence in Flint. But there was some of the
Inner city version of this.
Yeah. I'm seeing some of the same issues. So it's kind of neat that I was able to take that kind of big school experience and then bring it here, and not really see like a huge difference in the kind of work that I was doing. So it's kind of
cool. Yeah. So you've got these presentations. Do you see a spike in your referrals after these presentations?
Yep. So usually by the time I'm done with a presentation, and then by the end of the day,
Asking for your autograph. They're asking where your office is.
Yeah, and so I hand out my card and I hand out a brochure, and let them know.
With your graphic design on it?
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Cool.
By the time I get back,
can we get that on the website with a link thing on it?
I think so.
On the IBC website,
yeah.
Would be cool.
Yeah, I think so. We actually even bought like the rights to like a photo or an illustration. You know, it was $2 to buy it, but it's like we can use it now and reproduce it. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually design the actual logo, but after I do a presentation, I get back to my office and my little red light on my phone is like, blink, 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 yeah. So that's me. Every time I get a referral, every time somebody calls, I almost like get the chills because it's so exciting to me that people want to do this and they seem pretty okay with it. And I think part of it is that I still call myself a counselor.
Yeah,
so there's something, I think we've talked about that, but there's something a little bit easier maybe about just seeing a counselor.
So maybe a lower threshold of...
because there's academic counselors, and I'm just a counselor. Hey, that's my counselor. I'm going to go see my counselor. Okay. And that seems to be...
Doesn't raise any, stigma red flags, I guess.
Yeah, because when I was doing the survey, I think I called it, mental health survey. And it was in English and Spanish, and I had a couple of students that I was working with in academics, take a look at it to make sure the Spanish stuff made sense.
Yeah.
The questions made sense. They were matching right.
There.
And the reaction by so many people that looked at it were like, mental, what is this for, what, mental? Mental
like
problem?
An ad reaction just
yeah.
to the words mental.
I mean, it was right, it was immediate almost. So that was like, okay. And then I taught a class over the summertime and I basically used them too as a little focus group and said, what do you think about me calling myself a mental health counselor? And they were like, no, don't do that. And I was like, what about a counselor? They're like, yeah, that's fine. So
we've 1984'd our way into the proper terminology to not scare people.
Right. And that's okay. I can understand why, that maybe there's, a negative connotation. And so I'm calling myself a counselor, but I'm also saying in my classes that it's therapy. This is therapy.
Well, it is, because you're signing off
right.
as you're registered.
Right, and they need to understand that it's therapy and what is therapy, and they may not know. So part of what I do in the class and when I first do a session with a student is do a little bit of, my supervisor and I call it, therapy 101. What is therapy? They maybe not, they don't know that you come once a week for 50 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't necessarily know that. So we go through that, and we go through the confidentiality, the informed consent, so they understand that everything's confidential. Because that's another thing that I wanted to make clear to students is that nothing goes on your academic record. There's no one will know that you came to see me unless you tell somebody. There's obviously, if there's an emergency situation where I have to breach confidentiality, or they see you walking into my office. And my office is way back in the corner, and people don't even know really where I'm at. So it's good because I think that
Ms. Bill won't be coming on the radio to tell personal stories about your life.
Exactly. And I take that very seriously. And we actually have conversations about, hey, this is a small town. I go to Costco sometimes. You may see me there. And so this is my policy about saying hi to people. I don't say hi unless you say hi first. And even then, I keep it very brief. So that just to respect what we're doing here and your confidentiality, and they're really, really into that. So I think that that's an important piece, too, that's been very comforting to people.
Well, and you're coming out on the show today as a therapist in the community, and as if the people at the college probably didn't know that already. You've been doing presentations, and,
right.
You're right that carries a lot of weight.
Yeah. So, we're the one thing is that I wanted to definitely talk about the fact that there are some students that are not a good fit for the program because it is, it's brief therapy. There's usually, we usually do somewhere in the range of 10 sessions. So it's brief. And we do have some limitations. We can't work with somebody who has a very chronic, mental health issue where they're really decompensating. We can't usually work with people like that. So
because those aren't brief short-term solutions,
right,
typically.
Right. And
long-term
so,
management stuff.
Exactly. Now, if they have something that maybe at one time was very debilitating, or they have something chronic but it's well managed through medication or through their doctor or whatever, then I maybe can, but it really depends. So,
well, people with well-managed mental health conditions can still have situational stress
exactly.
that responds to,
that's
to
exactly.
brief
so,
short-term
And so that's what we do. You know, maybe working on social problems or relationship issues. But so just to be clear, like when people come call me, I'm not just immediately like, okay, you're on my caseload. It's like we do a screening first to make sure that it's the right fit.
And
exactly. So there's three things we're looking for. We're looking for if they're a danger to themselves or others, that's an immediate,
help.
Yeah. Also, do they need to be referred somewhere else? You know, if you have somebody who is about to lose their house and doesn't have food or something like that, then that's going to be a referral initially, maybe somewhere else. I mean, I've had people call where they're really actually not looking for therapy. They're looking for some other type
they
of
They are
service.
Really stressed, but they're stressed because
exactly.
they need something
yeah,
very
and,
specific.
And therapy, maybe their energy is not going to go into therapy at that moment. They
right.
maybe need to,
Let's talk about your starving to death.
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
Right. So, I have all my referral list so I can refer people out. I'm referring people to behavioral health. And then also, they need to understand that there's a waiting list. So there's those, like, the three things we need to hit in a screening.
Now, do you give them, when you screen somebody and they screen with the three things and get ready for the waiting list, do you give them homework or some sort of beginning management stuff to get ready to be seen?
I don't. The screening is very short. It's only about 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, because what we don't want to do is have somebody kind of come in and I meet with them for an hour, and it's like we may
open. So your screening process could actually like clog up everything else.
Well, not even, but I don't want to kind of establish this working relationship
right.
and then be like, okay, you may have to wait, 6 weeks to see
right.
me again, because
right.
it may open up something and then they have nobody there to help them get through some of that.
Right.
So we really kind of keep it, I need to know if they're really in danger. If they're a danger to themselves or others, that's the main thing, or if they need another referral. And so if they agree to go on the waiting list, we have a waiting list because we've been just flooded with people.
Because there's only one of you.
There's only one of me.
8,000 of them.
Thank you. I work part-time. There's limited hours. I'm there Monday through Thursday from about 9 to 3 or 4, depending on the day. And we're in the process of trying to figure out a way to get volunteer interns for now. Maybe someday in the future we can pay them a small stipend or something like that. But we know that we need, at least like one other clinician, especially someone who's bilingual. I speak Spanish, with moderate proficiency, but not enough to conduct a whole session.
A fuerzas. It basically means if you absolutely have to.
Right. And those are certain situations that I can talk to about with my supervisor. But we need to get somebody on board to do that at some point. And
so you can be here for a while. Yeah. You're going to grow that skill?
Yeah, I'm working,
Get the whole Spanish thing under your belt?
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I'm a Midwestern person. I picked up Spanish. It's possible.
Yeah, it's like I listened to the show yesterday and I understood about 95% of the show. My receptive Spanish is so much better than the production of Spanish, but I'm working on it. So we're working on that part. So going back to the waiting list, I just don't, there's not enough right now, not enough hours. I may, end up volunteering some hours just so I can see more people. The waiting list is not too bad right now. So if anyone's listening, now maybe is the time to jump on before spring starts.
And you heard it on the radio show
It'll
be...
I need to know your referral source, right?
We'll jump you up like 3 spots on the waiting list.
Yeah, awesome. So, spring is going to start. So with that is tons more students coming and seeing my poster in the cafeteria. So...
That's right. The new term just started, did it?
Right.
Not?
It's starting in February 16th. I think it's the 16th, the day after that holiday that's coming up. We have a waiting list, but it's kind of a bummer, but it's exciting because that means that there's definitely
a need.
There's a need. We know that, but there's the willingness to ask for help that's so exciting and inspiring to me.
So if people want more information about this program or want to kind of initiate this, are there phone numbers?
There's a phone number.
Yes.
I'm ready to tell it to you. Do I need to do the area code or am I okay without it? 760-350-355-6196 is my direct line.
Wait, I didn't get my pencil on time. I got the last two numbers.
It's 760.
Okay, hang on, wait.
Oh,
it's not sharp. Okay, let me sharp. Okay.
We have to.
Wait, that pen isn't right. Okay. All right, I'm ready. Well, wait, where's the paper? Okay, cool.
Ready?
Cool.
Yep. It's 760-355-6196. That's my direct extension, and it's a confidential voicemail box. So you can leave, you know, as detailed of a message as you need to. Again, it's not an emergency number, you know, and if you're in that situation, if you call my voicemail, it has the crisis line number on there.
Good, thank you.
I can't remember it right off the top of my head, so I won't say it because I don't want to make a mistake. But that's the one way that they can call to ask me. Or I'm in the 2100 building, which is where the nursing program is, and disabled student services.
In the north side of campus?
Wow, I'm about the worst
direction.
Yeah, I mean.
My bad.
I only really
in the
know.
Back parking lot? By the back parking lot?
Yeah, by the new science building.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a huge new science building, and we're kind of over in that area, so it's pretty cool.
I love science.
Yeah, it's a cool building, too. So you can just stop by. Stop by. I actually have a locked Dropbox where you can fill out a form, which is like a little contact form. Put it in there. I check it every day. I return phone calls within usually the same day, 24 hours later, on a business day that I'm working. Because I want to get on it, get them on the list, and find out if they need other services. So,
great.
Yeah.
Welcome to the community.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
On behalf of IVC, are you just going to look at outcomes? Are you going to like measure student performance now and see if Emily's magic touch works?
Because when I was putting the proposal together, we looked at, obviously data to kind of support what we were trying to get going. and definitely, like, depression can be a predictor of lower grade point average and increase the likelihood that somebody's going to drop out. And on that survey, 40% of students said that they had dropped a class before because of personal issues or mental health issues. So we definitely are. We were really pioneers kind of putting this together. So we, between me and Sergio and Ernesto, we had to, you know, work out all the details, you know, redo the forms like five times because they weren't working the first way we had them or the referral process or whatever it is. So
nice. We've
pretty much the first year is kind of the test run and we're figuring out what works. And then very soon we plan to get some type of assessment, inventory, some kind of baseline of functioning when the student first comes in and then when they leave, hopefully.
Yeah.
And maybe even keep in touch over time to see how they're doing later.
Nice.
But, yeah, because we want to support student success. That's the
So goal. Anybody who drops a class, it's like they should get, like, one of your brochures and it should say something really benign. Like, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people drop classes just because sometimes they drop them because they're having a tough time.
Yeah.
If you're having a tough time, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And that's, I think, what the academic counselors are already kind of working on, but
use your dropping classes as a possible indicator.
Exactly, because they're losing financial aid. If you drop too many classes, you're not doing well, you lose your financial aid, and then they're not coming back, and we really want to support student success and completion rates. So completion is like finishing what you came there to do, like finishing a certificate or a degree or transferring, and that's really the goal of this program.
Well, yeah,
ultimately.
Your mission of the college, basically.
Yep, so hopefully we'll...
People come and they just do stuff and then leave. They come and they get their degree and then they move on and do something else.
Yeah, so that's kind of the plan for now. But, yeah, we want to measure stuff and we just need to figure out what's going to work best.
So we're out of time. How was this for you?
It was super fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, you can call your grandma in Iowa.
Betty, yeah, Betty.
Call Betty and in a week or so this will be up on the internet. The internet, because in the Midwest they have plural internet.
Like instead of presents, I just
absolutely
email them a link.
Absolutely.
And so here you go.
Saves postage and everything.
It's a gift that keeps on giving, too.
Well, no, and I'm sure they'll be interested to hear it. I mean,
yeah,
it's like an hour of you.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a little snapshot or something.
Yeah.
So
thanks
for coming aboard today.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, join us again next week. We're going to have another great show, I'm sure. Mario's here. It's always a great show with Mario on the board. And this is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUVO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.